Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, and I'm joined on the mic today with Polly Questel. It's just the two of us, with Matt and Nathan both absent. But we are here after Manchester United's match yesterday, beating Granada 2-0 in the Europa League. And not the prettiest of matches, but job done in Europe. And I would say a decent performance given the amount of things that went against Manchester United going on yesterday.
That's a dangerous thing to say, given, look, I don't think this is a huge story. I think it's just that I follow like the wrong three people on Twitter who are retweeting everybody who holds this agreement, but saying decent performance or half decent performance or anything like that. I feel like you're going to get killed for saying that, though. I personally don't disagree with you.
Yeah, I mean, just from my perspective, decent meaning, you know, sort of average or above average. But, I mean, from the start, the referee going against us with decisions, not booking any Granada players despite all of their roughhousing, and then booking, I think, five Manchester United players over the course of the game. But in the first half alone, I think he booked three, including two that would end, that will miss the next leg. And that, I think, really affected the way that we were trying to approach the game, and they weren't able necessarily to respond to the physicality of Granada, and it really showed in the midfield. But despite that, we held our own. Granada never really had a chance on our goal. I think De Gea made one or two saves, and we got a 2-0 win out of it on the road.
Yeah, it was. It's like when you go back to playing as kids. When the referee did an absolutely horrific job. But when you go back to playing as kids, it's like when the ref tells you, I might miss one, but I'll always see the retaliation. And Granada were being physical with us, and we were retaliating and getting booked for it. Pogba wasn't a retaliation. Pogba's booking should be given to Aaron Wan-Bissaka because he made a horrific pass that forced Pogba to do what he did, and he caught him late. I mean, Pogba was on the ground and then some, and then tripped the guy. Like, it was so late. It wasn't like he got him on the slide. It was Pogba was on the ground and then got him. I don't think that should have been a booking 6 minutes into the match.
Yeah.
McTominay gets a booking. Yes. Maguire gets a booking. Shaw gets a booking. It happens. I don't think it's the end of the world. Look, like you said, Granada didn't come near our goal. They took 11 shots for an XG of 0.3, which is abysmal. They had no legitimate chance. And their actual on-target XG was actually lower than their regular XG, which I've never seen before. That's astonishing how you can do that. So they didn't come near our goal. It was just a matter of go out there and get a goal, get three goals. Do what you did to Real Sociedad. And it's unfortunate that we didn't do that, but we were, after 7, 8, 9 minutes, we were in control of the match, and then it was about, okay, let's break them down, which is not going to be easy. Dan James on the right wing. Dan James is a very hit-or-miss player. You know, he's had a good run of form, and then when you play him too much, he gets tired, and maybe he needs a little bit of a break, and he hasn't so much gotten one. He was playing for Wales. He came off the bench last week. Now he's starting. Mason Greenwood has not developed the back-to-goal aspect of his game yet. Marcus Rashford on the left, who I thought actually played pretty well, especially given his recent form, is injured, and he's hobbled, and there's only so much he can do. And teams have started to ignore Rashford on that left. Also why he was able to freely run in, which required a great touch for his goal, but teams have started to ignore him and they're just focusing on Bruno, and they've already been ignoring the right side, which just makes everybody's just zeroed in on Bruno now. It makes Bruno's job very difficult. Then in midfield, Bernardo's plan was, well, when Pogba gets the ball, swarm him. We'll leave McTominay open. Let McTominay pull the strings. When Pogba gets the ball, swarm him. If McTominay hurts us, good on him. So Pogba couldn't really be effective. And once, so they would do that in terms of that was how they sort of pressed us. And then once we moved past the midfield, then they sat back into, then they just got back and sat into, in their block, which we have creative problems for. But I thought overall, with the 11 that we put out on the pitch, first half, we played decently. And then in the second half, they had to take off Luke Shaw. So Alex Telles comes in. That means you lose all your buildup on the left side because Telles doesn't carry the ball forward. Rashford went to the middle. And the only thing I can think of that for that is because they wanted to limit his running. I don't understand why they didn't just take him off.
Right.
Rashford went to the middle, which moves Dan James to the left. Dan James has been abysmal on the left this year. He's been much better on the right. I know that the left is his preferred, quote unquote, preferred position, but it's not his best one. He's been better on the right. Mason Greenwood goes to the right, where you lose that creativity. He's not been that creative and player and the build-up player on the right. And by moving Telles over to the left and Dan James over to the left, they had to swap Pogba and McTominay. So now Pogba's on the left, McTominay's on the right. So your right side is now Juan Bissaka, McTominay, Greenwood. You just lost everything from the right side. And eventually you took off Rashford, you bring on Cavani, who doesn't contribute to the buildup. So yeah, it looked terrible in the second half. And that, given the players that we had out there, that makes sense. We did not in any way, shape, or form put out the best players in their best spots to create the best team, to create a flowing team. So it's what I expected.
I do think it sort of speaks to the quality, though, that despite, you know, not taking advantage of all the, I mean, there was maybe a 10-minute stretch where Granada looked like they might equalize in the second half. But other than that, it never really looked like we were threatened despite, you know, not having the best shape or control out there. And, you know, it was our pressing and, you know, forcing Granada to be physical that eventually got us the penalty to make it 2-0.
Yeah, and then those yellow cards come, and I don't think that's that big of a deal. It's 2-0, but Granada never got close to our goal. Axel Tonzebi can come in. I know Axel's had a rough season, but he's looked very good this year when playing next to Lindelof. Very much less good when playing next to Maguire. So that you have that going for you. And hopefully you can get that combination that worked so well against PSG back in line. You have Alex Telles to fill in for Luke Shaw. McTominay, well, you were probably going to go, you have a 2-0 lead that it's basically 90 minutes. It's going to be 90 minutes of just see this out. So you're probably going to get Matic and Fred anyway. Or if you went Pogba Matic or Pogba Fred, like either one, any one of those combinations is good enough to see out 90 minutes against Granada. That I McTominay's absence, okay. And Maguire, yeah, we said Tonzebi can come in. All the while, these absences, I think, are very easy to digest when you're coming home for a home leg, the second leg, with a 2-0 lead against a team that really doesn't attack well. So rather be suspended now than pick up a soft yellow card in that match and be suspended for leg one of the semifinal.
Right. And I do think that probably one of Bruno or Pogba should play, but keep the other on the bench in the case that you do need a goal in the second half. You don't have to start both of them. Maybe a game where you can get Van de Beek some playing time, but I don't know if contribution to Van de Beek developing as a player if you're putting him into a game where you just have to see it out.
Yeah, but you also could say, see, my thing is I would start Van de Beek and I would start Cavani and be like, look, this is a European team. You guys are more suited for the European game. That's why Lindelof plays so well in the Champions League and the Europa League. He's more suited to the European game than the English game. And if it were up to me, I'd start Fred and Matic, give Pogba that rest, and I'd start Van de Beek, and I'd start Mata on the right, because Van de Beek and Mata seem, granted, this is based on, like, what, 2 League Cup games, but they seem to get along because they do have brains that operate on a different level to most of the other United players. I'd start Cavani up front, but we all know that, like, Solskjaer will start Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah, that does seem likely. Although, you know, given maybe what the game against Tottenham would bring, I don't know if he'll be a bit beat up from that one. But yeah, going back to what you said about Lindelof, I do think it's interesting because his performance and obviously his assist triggered the Twitter reaction of compilations of, you know, him making that same sort of pass. And I do think that's something about Lindelof's game that is a little bit overlooked, but I don't know if it's because he doesn't do that much because the opportunity isn't there or because it's usually Maguire that moves the ball forward and tries to progress out of the back four. And, you know, obviously as a center back pairing, you want to have somebody covering most of the time. But that is something that Lindelof has been pretty good at in his time at United.
Yeah, just off the top of my head, I remember him doing it last year against Everton and at home, and Rashford missed. I believe he also did it for Dan James in that game, and James missed. He did it. That was exactly how they scored their goal against Sheffield United earlier this season, the first goal. Mm-hmm. And he did it about 7 or 8 times that game with Rashford straying offside every time. So it's a combination of Rashford's got to make the run. And recently Rashford just hasn't been running because he hasn't been able to move. So the opportunity presented itself and Lindelof was there. And that's also what I say. Like I said, I think it was maybe the second leg against Sociedad. I said, I don't know if Bailly is going to start another game if Pogba's not in the team, because you just lose so much of that ball progression when Lindelof isn't in there. And at least if Pogba was there, he's right in front of Bailly and he could pick up the ball and do it himself. And people were like mad at me, like, oh, you're going to make the whole defense weaker because the midfield's not doing their job. And it's like, it's not about making the defense of the midfield weaker. Like, the defense is good enough with Lindelof. There's not much of a difference defensively between Lindelof and Bailly. I know people will say they look stronger and Maguire looks better and aerially they're better, but they concede the same number of goals. In fact, they concede a few more when Bailly's in there. It's you make the team better when Lindelof has this asset next to him. Because again, just like how we saw you focus all on Pogba and leave McTominay open. If you didn't have Lindelof in there and you were just relying on Maguire to be the only guy to move the ball up the pitch from deep, well, then we just focus on not letting Maguire get the ball. Like, give it to the other guy. Let him try to make these passes out from the back. You need two people.
It's interesting, too, that especially, I guess, last summer / September transfer window, when a lot of people wanted another center back after Lindelof's performance against Sevilla, it seemed like what a lot of people on the bird were saying was they wanted somebody who was good on the ball and could progress it, you know, a left-footed center back who can do that next to Maguire. But that's never really something that's been a problem with Lindelof. That's definitely not the biggest weakness of his game. I think if a better center back does come in, they would have to have those qualities just so they could compete with Lindelof, because I mean, playing him next to Maguire, we've got two center backs who can both dribble up the pitch and pass very well.
Yeah, they both do put their head down and drive forward very, very well. Lindelof a lot more than Bailly ever does. Maguire does it too, and he had that shot from just outside the box that whizzed by the post.
No.
The reason you would want a left-footed center back is because then you can spray passes out. You could do that same exact pass that Lindelof made to Rashford. You could do that to the right side. And that's part of the reason United can't get anything going from the right side, is because, look, it's not Juan Bissaka. Part of it's Juan Bissaka. Part of it's Dan James. Part of it is the personnel there. But even when it's Juan Mata out there, and even in the League Cup this year when it was Diogo Dalot, United just didn't pass it that way. And it's an awkward pass for most of their guys, because as a right footer, you know, if you're trying to make a run in behind, you don't have the angle. Pogba doesn't have the angle to play somebody running down the wing the way he could play it for Rashford. And your left-footed midfielders, Matic and Fred, they can't really pass. They can't make long passes. If Pogba or McTominay want to play it down the right side, their only option really is a straight through ball, which is very difficult to pull off successfully. So that's why you would want that left-footed center back, so that you can create those passing opportunities to get it out to the right and make yourself more balanced.
This is funny. Part of, I think, the criticism of Ollie that I was seeing yesterday was that games like this, there's not really tactics that he brings into it. But I mean, this isn't something that's just, you know, I mean, this is how you break down teams. This is just another way to do it, is that long ball over the top. And I think it's worth mentioning, too, that that's exactly how Real Madrid have their lead on Liverpool right now, going into the second leg of their match.
Everybody loves to harp on the tactic. Like, when you park the bus, nobody has taxed it. Pep struggles against it. Klopp struggles against it. Everybody struggles against it. And I just read this article this week, before the Real Madrid-Liverpool game, about how Real Madrid won the Champions League. And it was just based on, we have Benzema, Ronaldo, and Bale. And between the three of them, one of them will do some cool shit and bail us out. And it was usually Ronaldo. And then the final that one year, it was Bale. But that was, you know, for the most part, it was let's play solid and let's let one of these guys bail us out. And you go back to United when they were winning Champions Leagues or getting to the final. And what were their tactics in those games? It was play solid. Don't let them hurt you. And, you know, the 2007-2008 team, which ran rampant on people and scored 3-4 goals routinely, would score 1-2 goals if they were lucky in the Champions League in the knockout stages, because it was Ronaldo or Rooney, like one of you do something. And it was typically Ronaldo. And then a year later, he hits that 40-yard shot against Porto. Like, that's how we won. We didn't do much in that game. That
was the only goal that happened in that game.
Yeah. And like you said, this week, Zidane using long balls out onto the wing to beat Liverpool. Mauricio Pochettino, how did he beat Bayern Munich? Simple counterattacks. You got Neymar and Mbappe and his plan, and you got some great midfielders, and his plan was, no, we're not going to try to go toe-to-toe with them. We're going to sit back, absorb, and hit him on the counter with Mbappe. And they were not impressive at all. They should have lost that game by a lot.
Really makes you think how this side would look if we did buy Jadon Sancho last summer.
They would look damn good, yeah. You know, provided that he wasn't injured. And
right. I like to think that he's not actually that injured, and he's actually just saving himself for when he does make the summer move. But
or he's saving himself for the Euros.
Yeah.
Where Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher are not taking him.
Yeah. So looking ahead to this Tottenham match, and I guess speaking of breaking down a low block, we are going in against a Jose Mourinho in turmoil, and an expedited process of Jose Mourinho and his seemingly endless cycle of succeed, fail, blame everyone, get fired. He seems pretty close to the getting fired stage, but not really sure what Daniel Levy or where Daniel Levy's head at.
Daniel Levy's head is at the $17 million that he has to pay Jose if he fires him.
Yeah, and that is much more costly for a club like Tottenham than it would be for a club like Manchester United. But going into this game, I'm not sure that I'm super confident that we can exact revenge for the 6-1 loss earlier this season. But it does seem like they're mentally weak enough that they will break if we take the opportunity.
I genuinely have zero idea how this is going to play out. The more than, obviously, like, you don't know how any game is going to play out, but more than any game, you know, like, at least going into the City match, we didn't think we'd win, but you should say, I know how Solskjaer is going to approach this match. It's a matter of, is Martial fit? And then, you know, are we fit enough that we can do it? I have no idea how Solskjaer is going to approach this match. I have no idea how Jose Mourinho is going to approach this match.
I feel pretty confident that Jose Mourinho will try to get the goals early and then sit on the lead, because that's usually what they do.
But is his goals early and sit on the lead thing is really just, we're going to hit you on the counter. We're going to score on our first shot. And then we're just going to really pack it in.
Yeah. And they don't really have the problem that they had last year when they dipped in form, that all their players are unhealthy or unfit. And obviously Kane and Son worries anyone. But I mean, if we have our full strength midfield out there, I'm not really sure that they worry me that much on the counterattack.
What is our full strength midfield?
Well, I'm assuming Fred starts, since he didn't start against Granada, and then Pogba and Bruno. since this is probably a game where we're going to have to break them down.
See, I could see that. And look, I've always been a big advocate for Pogba Fred as the midfield pair. I think our strongest midfield is probably Pogba McTominay.
Well, McTominay is suspended for Granada, so maybe he's that changes the consideration of his option for this week.
McTominay and Fred happen to be that's the thing is McTominay and Fred happen to be very, very fit players that you never really have to worry about them playing too many games in a row. Because also, like, what happens if they get tired? They can't pass. Okay, well, they can't pass when they're fit. So I would I could see it being McTominay and Pogba were the better pair for Granada, and they're going to be the better pair for Spurs. So that's how Solskjaer was picking them, and Pogba and Fred were the better pair for Brighton. I guess he's not going to go Pogba Matic because that didn't work at all last time. I don't know what else he does. I don't know what Mourinho does because Mourinho didn't park the bus at Old Trafford last year, oddly. Went to New Tottenham Stadium in the first game after lockdown and very much parked the bus. And Solskjaer was right to change it up and be like, no, well, Jose's probably going to come in here and park the bus again. Let's try to bring it to him. And Jose Mourinho very much did not do that in the 6-1 game. Even before United went down to 10 men, he was not parking the bus. That was a very deliberate game plan to attack United in weak areas where he knew they'd be weak. And it was a very good game plan. Now, are you gonna do that? Are you gonna do that again? Is Ollie gonna be like, well, we have to watch out for that, so I'm gonna go Fred McTominay, or is Mourinho gonna sit back on it?
Yeah, I mean, the season has a lot more context now than it did when we were three games into it, and teams have a lot better idea of each other. But Jose Mourinho has also started doing that thing lately where he'll play really weird defensive formations as a way to either say, you know, fuck you.
I don't care. Get me the players I want.
He's playing Tanganga at right back, which I don't know a whole lot about Tanganga. Well, I know he's a young player.
Poirier doesn't defend, so he was never Mourinho's favorite. And Matt Doherty sucks.
He benched Alderweireld. I'm not sure if he was injured or not. I don't really follow Tottenham that closely this season.
Alderweireld was also not playing well. Shocker, he's 31. He's losing a step. And Mourinho just gave him a new contract.
Yeah, maybe a good thing we didn't spend that £40 million on him in 2018.
Do you remember when Tottenham were trying to sell Alderweireld because he was 29? They're like, you're at the end of the road, and all the other teams were like, whoa, we're not going to buy him for that much money because he's at the end of the road. And guess what's happening now, Joes?
Yeah. So, I mean, hopefully he'll put out one of those fucky lineups, and maybe he'll put, you know, Eric Dier in the back four, put a couple midfielders as... You know, formation, a sort of homage to that time we went to West Ham and got our ass kicked. I would like to see that energy from Tottenham on Sunday.
Oh, like with that back three with like McTominay and
Matic
in the back, and Martial starting up top with Lukaku, and
he played like a 3-5-2 or something.
Yeah, that was bad. I'd like to see that. I also like. He could put out that fuck you lineup, and then I don't know if we'll take advantage of it. See, the thing is that if we have all the ball, it's on us to dictate the pace. And if I go nuts here, it's because I'm watching a horse race, and my horse is coming down the stretch, and we're in the lead. And this would be a big win. All right. Okay, we got it.
Nice.
All right, so... It's on us to dictate the pace, and we don't do that well. We don't – it's very – unless we get punched in the mouth, it's very hard for us to come out and just come out flying, which – and I get that. There's no fans. There's no atmosphere. You're tired. Sometimes you get out there when you work out, when you want to go for a run or something. You went for a run yesterday. You went for a run the day before, and you get out there, and some days you're like, this is the third day in a row, and – I feel great, and I'm going to try to push myself to go a little bit at a faster pace today or a little bit longer. And sometimes you get out there, and it's the third day in a row, and you go, oh, man, not today. My legs just aren't getting it. So it's hard to get into the game, really. Sometimes you get that tackle. Somebody gets their studs into your shin, and you go, oh, I'm in. I don't think playing slow is necessarily that bad. Manchester City are the slowest team in European football this year. No one moves slower than them. Pep Guardiola openly talks about how the key this season is being able to control everything so that we can maximize the amount of time that our players only have to walk on the pitch. If they walk, they're not using as much energy, and then they'll last longer because everybody's tired this year. There's too many games. So walking isn't that bad, but what City have is 11 players who could play with the ball at their feet, and they are patient so that they could pass it around for 75 minutes and suffocate the game and take away your will to live and not worry about turning the ball over until finally that opening comes. We have Bruno Fernandes, who is wired to play the risky pass. And if I give up the ball, I lose the ball. It's okay. We'll go and we'll win it back. And Rashford, who wants to take players on. And Dan James, who has a horrible first touch and isn't the best at passers. And Mason Greenwood, who isn't the best at passers. And McTominay, who's got a very bad first touch, not the best at passers. Matic, with a great first touch, but very limited passing. Fred, terrible passer. You know, Pogba, who players swarm to him because that's where his weakness is. So when we're playing slow, we're just not built to maintain the ball and just ping it around the way that City can, and therefore those openings don't come. So that's the problem with when we play. It's not a problem that we're playing slow. It's that we're just not patient enough and we're not good enough to hold on to the ball when we play slow. That if we do have to dictate the pace like that, it kind of does play into Tottenham's hand, even if they have that fuck you lineup out there.
Yeah. I think it's also worth pointing out, too, that, I mean, they've lost one in their last five Premier League games, and Tottenham are actually in a position now where they're 3 points out of the top four, where, you know, a while ago they were in relegation form, where they were dropping points left and right. Now, you know, that sort of narrative has still followed them, and the loss to Zagreb obviously really hurt, but they're still in a much better position this season to qualify for Champions League than they were last season.
Yeah, and I mean, to be honest, you look around at the top six and the teams that go to the Champions League, and if I want to take Tottenham seriously as a Champions League contender, they have to get a 0-0 draw against us.
Yeah, honestly, they're kind of in a position that we were last year, where it's, you know, them, Chelsea, and Liverpool are fighting for that last, you know, top four spot with West Ham. It doesn't look likely that Leicester City is going to fall off like they did last year, but who knows, they might. You know, we've got a nice buffer zone. It really does seem like it's three of the supposedly top six clubs scrambling for that last spot, and Tottenham are one of them.
Yeah. They have turned it around a bit recently, but that's also because everybody else kind of hasn't. They, you know, that middle area, there's a reason that West Ham are suddenly in the top four. I know West Ham have been on good form, but what, 2 weeks ago they lost to us, or two games ago. Mm-hmm. They didn't even get a point. And suddenly they're in the top four. It's because, look, we went top of the table in mid-January. What, were we 3 points clear of Liverpool, or when we were even with them? No, we were 3 points clear heading into the game at Anfield. 3 points clear. And since then, we have won six, drawn six, and lost one. Not great. When we were top of the table, we were 4 points clear of fifth place. And in that time where we have won six, drawn six, lost one, so we haven't even won half our games, we are now nine points clear.
Right.
Nobody's winning. And that's why when everybody complains, oh, this performance looked terrible, and what's more concerning is that all of our performances recently have been terrible. Have you watched any other game? Because nobody is playing well. City keep winning. City are the most boring team in the world. I love watching Borussia Dortmund because they are fun. They always have good, talented players, whether it's Jadon Sancho or before him, Ousmane Dembele. And before that, the Klopp team, and now Gio Reyna and Erling Haaland.
But how many trophies have they won in that time?
They've won a cup. But either way, fun team to watch. They have been so boring to watch recently. because they're exhausted and they could barely win. And that game against City almost put me to sleep. It was so boring. The only game that I've seen that has not been a United game that is in recent weeks, every international game over that last break was awful. The only game that I've seen recently was Bayern and PSG. That's the only game that was entertaining. And if I were a Bayern fan or if I were a PSG fan, I would not have come out of that game and said, oh, we had a great performance. That was just for a neutral. That was a very fun game to watch. But every team around the world, the players are just exhausted. They could barely move. So, yeah, United haven't been playing well, but no one else is.
Yeah. And I think, you know, PSG maybe have the added benefit of a little bit of rest because Neymar and Mbappe both kind of coming back from, I think, periods on the sideline. But, yeah. Folks is tired. So do we have predictions for this Tottenham game or?
I have none.
Yeah.
Someone asked me on Twitter today how I see the rest of the season playing out. And I didn't respond, but my response is with a lot of games, just like the Granada game and the Brighton game, which we're good enough.
Yeah.
The Brighton game, we conceded, you know, we made one mistake and conceded a goal and there was no panic. It was like the early season where we were just like, we'll come back and we'll get this. And we did. We created not just enough. I'd like us to create a little bit more, but Renato, we created enough. Bruno missed a big chance before his penalty, but we haven't let anybody really get in near our net. Brighton took 5 shots. 2 of them were on the Danny Welbeck goal.
Yeah. I guess we haven't really talked about that game, but I actually thought the second half was some pretty good. Maybe it was good by comparison to the first half,
the first game after an international break was always terrible.
Yeah, but I think, you know, Ollie made some pretty good adjustments. Obviously, the halftime team talk worked. They started pressing better, and that's what led to the first goal. And I don't know. I thought it was a decent performance.
Yeah, I didn't think it was bad. It's first time against a. Out of an international break, all those games are always terrible. And we came out, we got the job done, we got the 3 points in a weekend where everybody else lost, by the way. Chelsea got played off the pitch by West Brom. Leicester lost. Everybody did bad, and yet we are here getting 3 points and criticizing the team for it. Or not us two, but the fan base. I don't know why. But anyway.
Even though that is, what, our 25th or 25 points from winning, or not from winning, from losing positions now in the Premier League, which is... only 4 off of
But that's like a false stat too. That's a false stat too, because when you go down in the first minute, or in the first 5 minutes, as we've done so many times, you have a lot of time to get back into it. It's not. This is like the piece that I wrote a couple weeks ago, where it was like, where I tried to quantify it is the manager getting yourself back into the game with his changes, and you know, because sometimes Solskjaer looks at that team. Well, we were 1-0 down at halftime, and everybody said, it's not working, you've got to make a change. And he said, I'll change it, but I'll change things up tactically, but my 11 best guys are on the pitch, and I trust them to get it done. And it didn't take long for them to equalize. We've trailed at halftime 6 times this year. In 4 of those games, Solskjaer's made a change at halftime. In the other 2 that he didn't, we have equalized within 15 minutes of the restart. So, and most managers do that, because a lot of times managers go, I picked the 11 that I picked for a reason. Like, my best 11 guys are on the pitch. So how do I see the rest of the season playing out? A lot of performances that look like the Brighton match, the Granada match, mostly that. I think there will be one randomly, can't tell you what game it'll be, but randomly we'll get one really good performance where we go, oh man. We play like this every game. We're going to run away with everything. And one really shit performance.
I'm going to say, I think our one really good performance will come against either Leeds or Liverpool. Just because I think the context of playing against a rival, even though neither of them are very strong this season, I think that'll probably give a big morale boost if we can get a nice win against one of those two.
Yeah. It would. I hope we approach the Liverpool game boldly, because they're not that good and they are there for the taking. We've proven that at Old Trafford this year, and we left 3 points on the table at Anfield. I'm more scared about the Leeds game.
Yeah, they are in better form.
They were in good form when we played them the first. No one saw that 6-2 coming. It wasn't like they rolled in and we were like, oh, strike while the iron's hot. It was like we caught everybody.
It's like, oh, wow, there's space. Cool.
Right. And I don't see that happening a second time. So that's what concerns me.
Yeah. I am going to say I think our bad performance comes against either Wolves or Burnley. Both of those games have the potential to be very, very boring.
I think they'll be boring, but I think we're going to be okay. Well, here's the thing. If we haven't secured top four by the Wolves match, something has gone drastically wrong. And I mean, we've discussed this before. Europa League's more, what's the difference between second, third, fourth, other than, oh, we get to say best of the rest. If you're between second and third, but you're in the Europa League final, third place doesn't matter. So in that regard, if we are in the Europa League final and top four is confirmed, we'll probably be rotating the side anyway to prepare for the final, in which case the Wolves match will be hella boring. If we did need to play for it, I think we'll be okay at Wolves for the one reason that it's during the day. And like, I have this thing, like, when was the last time you saw a game at Molineux during the day? Like, I have this thing that, like, basically, Wolves only play home games on Friday nights or Monday nights.
Even at Old Trafford, it seemed like we had those two cup games against them last year. Both of those were in the evening, of course.
Yeah, and the dead of winter.
Yeah,
the game that we went to Wolves last.
Yeah, in December. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a Tuesday night. The game that we went to Wolves last year was a Monday night. The FA Cup match against Wolves was a 3:15 p.m. Eastern time kickoff, so 8:15. I don't remember when the league game was, probably earlier, because we didn't do 8 kickoffs back then. But, yeah, watching this season, look, Wolves are kicking off now. They happen to be away this time, but on Monday night, they were home. Which, when was the last time you saw you saw the sun at Molineux? Like, it's just never there, so I feel like you go into Molineux on a May afternoon, and that aura and mystique is just not going to be there, and we'll have a good time.
Yeah. Worth noting, Chelsea went there on the last day last season.
And they were up 2-0, like, within seconds.
Yeah, I think they won 3-0 or something like that. So it was a pretty comfortable day for them, and when we thought maybe that was a troubling matchup for them. But all right, I think that's going to do it for us this episode. We'll be back sometime next week, hopefully with a larger cast. But I think we're going to record one in between the Tottenham and Granada second leg. So stay tuned for that. Thanks for listening. I've been Colin.
And Paulie.
Auf Wiedersehen.